long ago, a Japanese scientist have proven that the brain emits its full potential when the eyes are half open, half closed. Interesting. That the power of the brain emits its full potential when the eyes are half open, half closed. Now every mystic knows this, that the only way you can really draw on God within his being, the only way he can vibrate this energy up is the half open, half closed eyes. And he can block thousands of people glaring at him simply by looking at them with one darshan. Knock out all the wind out of them. And he has smitten all my enemies upon the cheekbone, that thou hast broken the teeth of the ungodly. In other words, that force will go right through them, and the block, the love is so great that comes through the half open eyes, that there's nothing else for the man in anger or in hate to do but look at you. Well, what are you going to do? Then they will begin to realize salvation belongs unto the Lord. Thy blessing is upon thy people. The man who gives darshan to a screaming host of people automatically radiates so much love that what happens to that 10,000 people, that they are like spiritualized. They're immobilized with the love. They can't help feeling the love flowing to them now. They can have all types of questions to ask you, to harass you. Now you just give them one darshan. They calm right down, and before you know it, they don't know what happened to them. They feel like they're losing their vitality is going out of them. That's the power of the spirit. And again, it says, Silla, so be it. Well, I think I had many encounters like that when I was in Virginia Beach. And every time, like, so the situation is simply that the security of God's protection is based upon that particular love. It's good. See how each psalm is leading into a plan. Psalm number 4, it says, David now prays for audience. In other words, when the social structure is lobbied by its citizens, even Mr. Nixon or any political figure has to have audience to the Lord in some way. How do we fight back these particular harassments or inroads into our authority? Well, here is David's way of relating how a leader or anyone is drawn into consciousness. Hear me when I call, O God of my righteousness. That means the consciousness responds to attunement when we utilize the right law of meditation. Thou hast enlarged me when I was in distress. That means consciousness expanded when negative thought patterns were trying to take over. Have mercy upon me and hear my prayer. Let relaxation occur in the body. Let the tension go. And let my consciousness expand. we meditate, we really don't know as big enough what is going to occur in us. And when anything occurs in us, we are a little afraid, sometimes skeptical or worried. Now, since we are skeptical or worried, we begin to doubt. The fear that we are not doing the right thing. If we're afraid that we're not doing the right thing, we start calling up the person who taught us meditation and asking, well, what do I do now? What do I do now? What do I do now? How do I know I'm getting results? Is that the way it should always be? I'm buzzing some in my ears, or the roots of my hair are being dragged up, big pain in my head, a cold sweat trembling all over the place. And if you say yes, that's the way you should feel. But I didn't feel that when I was in the other church groups. I had very nice feelings in those church groups, and now I join your group here, I'm getting all kinds of sensations. Something is wrong. You know that nothing is wrong. It's just a normal process and how the mechanism works. And they're partially doubtful and partially calm. If they keep up the meditation, eventually they'll calm down. Sometimes they're afraid to continue, so they avoid. So David is showing how we should respond in this condition inside, if you're half restless or half calm. Hear me when I call. Let me feel inside that the contact I made of this inner peace is a tulip, is flowing through. O God of my righteousness, that means the right principle of meditation, of thinking. Love. Thou hast enlarged me when I was in distress. My consciousness expanded beyond the limitation of the negative pole when I began to meditate. When I began to meditate, I was in a certain state of negative thought patterns because I was frustrated, and now I am meditating. I have gone beyond the frustration. My consciousness is stretching. So my consciousness has expanded. Therefore, have mercy upon me and hear my prayer. In other words, let this consciousness flow through me so that I am confident to handle it, and I know without doubt that everything is working as it should. This is confirmation that the symptoms that are occurring in us in meditation are real, and they are nothing to be afraid of. They're just going on naturally. O ye sons of men, this is the usual conflict now coming up between you and the higher consciousness in meditation. How long will ye turn my glory into shame? How long will ye love vanity and seek after leasing? Leasing. What the consciousness is saying to the person in meditation is this: how long will you go along doubting the possibilities of the experience being genuine? And what you think is happening to you is partial and not the real thing. You don't really have a full comprehension, a full confirmation of it. There is no real certitude. Now, so you will doubt and dabble and try to avoid going to the fullest acceptance that these symptoms are real, these symptoms are genuine, and that this is a real spiritual life. This is what must occur in the body to bring out the spirit. So you'll continue in the leasing. That means you will try to accept partially, get involved partially, and then try to withdraw to come pure. Now, when you lease something, you really don't own it. So if you don't really have a full conviction that these symptoms that are occurring in you in meditation are truly the right symptoms that's supposed to happen, you're going to be doubting, and you're going to going back to the old feelings that that is the right symptoms to have, and then you say, well, every time I get into meditation, I have these feeling sensations. Now, the Lord is getting sort of angry here because he's showing in his own words, the way he's saying it back to the brain or the consciousness, that we are kind of foolish. O ye sons of men, O you egos, that's another way of saying it. Higher consciousness is saying, okay, ego, wait a minute, take it easy. How long will you turn my glory into shame? How long will you avoid facing the intuitive nature? How long will you avoid this particular inner certitude, this inner wisdom, this inner luminosity of yourself? How long will you love vanity? How long will you remain in the unrealistic thought patterns? They are not real. They're like show. The sensation of the sensory nature are not real. They're not the real experiences. They're not the real sensations. The real sensation is this pulling of the head, this twanging in the ears, this gnawing sensation of being expanded and stretched and flowing. These are the real things. These are the real extrasensory frequencies that you've got to get into. How long are you going to keep avoiding them? How long are you going to try to disassociate from them? And seek after leasing. Seek after other conditions that are only temporary and not permanent. Whereas these symptoms are permanent once you understand them. That's why I say all the symptoms of cosmic consciousness or God awareness are identical like sickness. And therefore, they feel alike, they look alike, but there's a difference between sickness and cosmic consciousness. And sickness, it's permanently there, creating a disturbance in the cells. In cosmic consciousness, you have an experience of it, knowing that you are master of it, it doesn't affect you, you transcend. But know, and I must realize, the Lord, the creative intelligence, has set apart him that is godly for himself. Now that individual who is going to have cosmic consciousness is set aside to experience all these symptoms that are similar to sickness. You know, when a man's sick, you don't want to be near him, right? When you come close to a cosmic conscious person, he's just the same. You don't want to be too close and near him. He might infect you with his love. The Lord will appear when I call after him. The Lord will hear when I call upon him. So, once the person is following the path of inner consciousness, he will hear this awareness, he will be drawn to this awareness, and he will recognize this awareness, but he will be set aside from every other individual because he is different. He's not the same individual no more. He's taking a different attitude to life. So he's going to be criticized, he's going to be ostracized, and therefore no one would really relate to him. So the higher consciousness is saying again, stand in awe. Remain firm in your own consciousness where you are. And stop dibbling and dabbling with your wandering mind. Begin to be where you are, shape up. Quit this so-called, you love me not, technique of the mind. Get down to the actual realization that you are singled out for realization, and because you're singled out for realization, you will be realized. In spite of yourself, in spite of others trying to tear you down, you've got to be realized because there's no other way for you to go. So stand in awe, stand in this retrospect, in this condition, accept yourself and be it. And sin no more, that is, don't deviate from the ideals that you set up to pursue the spiritual life. You have been singled out to pursue a life of discipline, of love, a life of self-conscious, ethical life. So because you're singled out, you may think of, people think you're kind of weird. They don't want to trust you. You look kind of stupid or something, sitting down, munching on whole wheat bread and brown rice, some carrot sticks. They think you're weird looking, or something wrong with you. And they'll try to encourage you to go and have hamburgers and coke, and all types of variations, because you're standing for, you have chosen to do this particular mind expansion by a rational method. They think you're touched in the head. But your science of the religion, your science is telling you how to face these people. He says, stand in awe, accept this religion, and don't deviate, don't sin no more, don't break away from it. Stick to the path. This is the discipline. Commune with your heart. Practice your meditation upon your bed. Go find a spot in your house and forget these people that are constantly pulling you all over the city. But they are for you. Get in your bed and sit down and do your simran or your hallowing the holy name and meditate with your heart. Start bringing your consciousness up to the eye center. And quit getting involved in their negative pull to tear you down. So the science of the soul is specific. It gives you a legitimate way to offset their pressure. Commune with your own heart upon your bed and be still. The process is actually you sit down on the bed and you calm the mind for the first time. Really. Not trying to tell the Lord how to run his universe. One time I did that, you know, he said to me, you think you can change it? Try. And that was the end of my busy trying to figure out what he was doing in his world. I realized I can't change anything because it's not there to change. What I have to learn is how to accept him as he is. And that's the miracle of the whole process. Accept him as he is, whatever happens to you, happens to you. He has a reason for it to happen to you. And he has a reason for relieving you from it. So there is no argument anymore. Strictly live as you do, as being is, and you are free. There is no more conflicts. You see? So right away, I surrender to the idea of the divine will. And beingness is divine will. Now, stand in awe and sin no more. And he says, stay where you are and don't go be pulled by other living thought patterns trying to tear you down, trying to repeat the old habit patterns again that you're trying to avoid. Don't generate those desires that tend to deteriorate. And commune, that is, sit down and meditate. With your own heart, free will, free joy, happiness. Don't do it like a sort of mechanical thing, you know. Meditation, not that. It's a joyful thing. In other words, sing if you want to sing in meditation, relax, be still in your own bed, find a spot. Use the word bed because that's very close to you, there's a lot more closer to me than a bed. That's a place where you sleep at night and you really trust the Lord then. Because when you're sung to sleep, you don't even know if your person is taking your shoes off. You really trust the Lord and when you're sung to sleep on a bed. So using a bed is a sacred spot, it's a personal spot. And be still. Be just as still as if you were sound asleep. Don't fight the issue, or don't try to generate thought patterns. Then that wonderful Hebrew word contact, Selah, what will be with me, so we can't fight this. He's telling you already that this is the way of the initiate. The initiate accepts and live it out. He gets involved in this environment, but he doesn't run for this environment. The involvement is the action, and the action is the freedom. Then he says, offer this sacrifice of righteousness. See what kind of sacrifice he wants? He doesn't offer sacrifice of God for material things. When you sit down to meditate, offer this sacrifice of righteousness. That means you send up the thought, Father, I love you. That's the biggest sacrifice you can ever make. You can want. You your mind, with your heart. To tell an unseen God that you don't even know what it looks like to love him. That's a challenge. It's easy to love somebody and tell them you love them because you can see them. You see me, you tell me you love me. That's because you remember what I look like. Have you ever seen God and tell him you love him and already feel it? That's difficult, but that's a sacrifice. That's why it's a sacrifice. Because you got to make that particular attempt without knowing what to trust in. To make it click for you. To turn you on from inside. And put your trust in the Lord. Put your trust in a feeling that's going to call up your spine, that you speak up to the top of your skull and down your spine. You got to trust now this vital life power coming up in you. It's called Kundalini, that vital power, and it tingles right all the way. You got to trust that now. You don't even see what it looks like, but you're feeling it. And you got to trust that. Pretty rough deal. But the scriptures are telling you what you've got to do and what you have to accept. And there's actually no other way you can do it. The science of the soul is very specific. And in the Psalms, it is called mantra yoga. It's to show you how you have to relate to this thing and make it work for yourself. Now we have covered the two types of people that exist. We covered the relationship of the government and the system that we exist in the first two psalms. And in the third psalm, we see now the head of the government is caught up and has to find inner communion to offset the patterns of harassment, what we call modern day lobbyism. So we're moving on now to man's happiness is in God's favor. How the inner consciousness gains contentment by total awareness has God's favor. Inner contentment from the ego nature to total awareness. There be many that say, who will show us any good? We've all been that road. When we said, is there anybody here who will love us or do something for us? Or do anything good for us? Lots of us have done it. I've said it many times. It's only natural. And why should it not be natural? It is because we don't know how to evaluate. The mind is not trained to evaluate spiritually yet. It's only evaluating in terms of need. It's not evaluating in terms of compassion and mercy and grace. But only in terms of need and security. So, we say there be many that say, who will show us any good? Lord, that's your last resort if you don't commit suicide. You always start this unseen force. As if he's out there waiting for you to ask him. Sometimes he's not even waiting for you to ask anything. Simply because you can't live without relating to a higher part of your being as a supporting force within you. Unconsciously, subconsciously, intuitively, you sense this and you can't relate it. And you don't want to accept it. You want to feel that you're free enough to do without it. And you fight desperately. Coming back now, the man's happiness is in God's favor. As I said before, we covered the first two psalms. The first one tells you the types of people you are dealing with in the world. You have to pick a side and be one or the other. The right thinker, or positive one, or the wrong thinker, the negative one. In the Bible language, it's called God, your body. And then the second psalm deals with your environment, political makeup, kingdom, and all this. forms of existence in which we find ourselves. The third psalm shows you your protection in the reference of the environment, in that particular frame of activity. Now comes the fourth psalm, where the very head of government seeks to be aware of how it will guide itself. And at the same time, it's telling you as a person, in your own internal guidance, how you guide yourself. But when you guide yourself, there must be a result. You don't just guide yourself out of something for nothing. It must have some value. By your fruits, you will know if you're making progress. A tree is known by its fruit. The man of spirituality is known by the fruit of his consciousness and his inner peace. So man's happiness is in God's faith. There be many that say, who will show us any good? This is true. Many of us will question anybody doing good for us. Lord, lift thou up the light of thy countenance upon me. In other words, let this consciousness be revealed. Thou hast put gladness in my heart more than the time that their corn and their wine increased. Joy comes from within, not without. One can have a bumper crop, a large payroll, and still be discontent. But the joy you feel in meditation every day is entirely different. It spreads out through your entire being, and it starts in the heart center, the heart chakra. And there you hear the bells ringing inside. The very first inner experience in the sankara, when the heart chakra opens up, you hear the bells ringing. You listen to the sankara, then you've gone back to God for the first time, and you're attuned to it, and it lifts you up. And I will both lay down, be in peace, and sleep. You know this word sleep, repeating itself again in how many psalms? Every time we read a psalm, there's a reference to sleep. I said the technique of this mystic life is to be able to think a thought and forget it, just like you do in sleep. If you can do that, you have the power to work this consciousness, the ability to shut it off. Now, if it keeps holding on, then it's wandering. Therefore, you have no control. The idea is to have the thought and let go. Then consciousness flows. For thou, Lord, only makest me to dwell in safety. In other words, by our natural makeup of consciousness, we would protect ourselves. And if we accept our environment, wherever we are, that we are in the right place, at the right time, for the right experience, this is eternal safety. Even if a house is falling down, and you're there at that time, at that particular place, and it's falling down, with that consciousness, you're still going to be safe, because it will pull you out. And that's what we call making it by the skin of your nose or photo finish existence. You're locking it through. This is divine will. It works. Here is scary, nerve-wracking existence. But it is divine law. And you just got to accept it and enjoy it. And if you ever get on a spiritual path and you're really looking for something hair-raising, follow divine will, you can find out. There's nothing more hair-raising and more nerve-wracking and real nerve-wracking. Have all the thrills like a roller coaster of the love. That's divine will and work. Now God favors not the wicked. It's telling you exactly where the favor is, where the particular function of truth exists. God is love, and love don't nourish wickedness or ignorance. Love doesn't sustain, it withdraws itself. It's like the species that came here at one time in existence. Some of them are gone because they serve no purpose after a while. They couldn't sustain themselves. The multiplication would be too great. They'd have to eventually destroy themselves. If the dinosaurs were around, what would happen? Many of the huge mastodons that were here, if they kept on multiplying, what would happen? We find that nature has a way in which she arranges all these forces to keep the balance. It's our mystical way, our boundless way of maintaining harmony. Now, if you say survival of the fittest, then that's a kind of wrong statement when you apply it to a dinosaur. who could survive? People who was more fit to survive. You get the idea? Because he was stronger, bigger, and healthier. He was far more fit to survive than the smaller creatures. But then if you look at the scriptures give you a clue who actually survived. The meek will inherit the earth. Who would really survive? The strong or the weak? Or the meek? Which one of the three really survived? It's not the strong surviving. It's not the weak surviving. It's the meek. A meek person is not strong nor weak. A meek person is humble. He's attuned. Therefore, he's synchronized to life itself. He is living divinely. He survives. He that doeth the will of the Lord is my brother and my sister. That individual is surviving all the time. He's right. He's accepting divine law. So, we come to that particular statement that God favors not the wicked, which is the sound, which is sound. And therefore, when thoughts are coming up into our consciousness, we realize that unrighteous thoughts or negative thoughts really don't have any virtue. They're going to fall apart. Tests will be made in that between cultures of generating love with your right hand and generating hate with your left hand. And after a while, the cultures died on the left hand. And those on the right hand began to multiply. And cultures that had no thought given to them, simply neutral, partially multiplied, died out. So even love is important without animosity. See, you have the animosity to a neutral thing and say, well, I don't love it, I don't hate it, I just am hands off. Even that dies out. And those that the animosity dies out, and those that you have some intimacy or bond, it survives and thrives. Now this is proven. Well, it's proven. Let us relate this to cell, this flesh, the human body, which is the temple of the existing principle, and work it now, see how it can work. If we can work it, then we've got something that within our control. That's what we're looking for. How we can consciously control this mechanism to apply ourselves constructively in our environment efficiently. Because that's what we're here for. We're not here to run from the world, we're here to live in it. But only by living it can we understand it. And understanding is the highest thing you should get if you're going to get anything out of spirituality. You can't carry riches in your brain, so that's out of the question. Health is something that, if you understand this question, you'll have it. Death is a condition. If you understand it, you surpass it. Death is your last enemy. That is your last opposition. So what is really the purpose of existence? The art of how to live. If you know this, then you understand your existence. Then there is no more dilemma in your mind. There is no more limitation. You are a free person. Because that's what you're supposed to be. Free. In charge of this mechanism. Now, the psalm says, give ear to my words. Listen. Don't just mere hear. There's a big difference between hearing and listening. Give ear to my words, O Lord, and consider my meditation. Now we come across this strange word, meditation, long before the Maharishi came around to visit us. This word meditation is haunting us now. How do we meditate? Find yourself in bed and commune with your heart. Simple, right? We don't have to go and find fantastic techniques. We know how to do that. That is just surrender and let it happen. Give ear to my words, O Lord. Consider my meditation. That is, when you sit down, tune your words to be the Lord's name. You hallow it all. Father, I love you. Merely, Father, I love you is potent enough to open the centers in you. Hearken unto the voice of my cry. Now, take back everything we create in this world from us, even life. But the only thing he can force us to give up is God, because he's love himself. He's inside of us. We have to give it to him freely. That he cannot employ no pressure upon us in any way to love him. Now, the moment we say we love him and let it really happen, he brings us into manifestation. He is forced to reciprocate. Hearken unto the voice of my cry, my King and my God. That means by uniting consciousness, the focal point that governs you is King, God, a supreme ideal principle within you. For unto thee will I pray, unto this particular relationship, I will bind myself. That's why I say meditate day and night. We bind ourselves to this commitment of an ideal and an involvement, a sense of judgment and a sense of action. My voice shall thou hear in the morning. Now he's telling you again the time. I said that this morning, the best time for meditation is what time? You get up at 5 o'clock and 3.5 hours meditation. No. My voice shall thou hear in the morning, O Lord. In the morning will I direct my prayer unto thee and will look up. Now when you meditate, what position should the eyes be? Turn up to the third eye, the center of the being, the Christ center of man. You should always be attuned at the third eye, or should be. Thereby, we are validating now what the Japanese scientists are saying. When the eyes are half open, we have the full potential of the brain at work. Jesus is saying, when thine eyes are single, the whole body is full of light. Now, all these only tell us one thing. Look up means the same thing. There are only three positions that the eyes can go in. Forward, down, or up. Time for yoga class. The person who had my keys was Pat Merck. And I, consciousness, should be lined up at the eye center, the pituitary, or focal point, the mental microphone of the brain, because you're broadcasting. But you're not broadcasting anything else than, Father, I love you. I'm not asking him for anything. So real meditation is strictly a flow of love, loving the Lord our God with all your mind and heart and soul and your neighbor as yourself. There's no greater force than this particular type of communion. There's no greater mantra than Father I love. It's the cheapest mantra I know. Don't cost you no $75 to learn. And it don't cost you any fantastic fee to be attached with. Simply that you've got to do it. And doing is the whole essence of it. For thou art nothing God that hath pleasure in wickedness. For thou art a consciousness total that doesn't engross itself with deterioration. That's what wickedness all means. Self erosion. Neither shall evil dwell with thee, that is, negative thinking. Total consciousness does not sustain or entertain negative thinking, simply because it will perish. It will fall apart. The foolish shall not stand in thy sight. Now, the first time you run across the word fool and foolish, Jesus says, call no man a fool. There must be a reason why we never use the word fool to a human being. Because there must be some law we are breaking that we're not aware of, some thought pattern we're setting up that we're not aware of, and we involve a karmic debt. Now, clung is a different thing. You can clung around. can see the man as a clown. When you see a man as a fool, you're actually cutting the very vital life principle that's in the individual representing the creator and addressing the creator as a fool. And therefore you're addressing yourself at the same time, because you and the individual are drawing the same breath in the same atmosphere at the same time. That's why Jesus is making a very specific meaning or issue of not calling another individual fool. The foolish shall not stand in thy sight. Thou hatest all workers of iniquity. The consciousness cannot stand the fact of destruction by its own volition, though it has the desire to destroy itself at times. But even then, it cannot stand the fact, because it's committed by its own natural law to repeat the principle all over to test itself. It will have to go through the process of learning again. It has to come back to another body form to learn out the mistake of making that mistake of killing itself. So it has to learn that lesson. Thou shalt destroy them that speak leasing. Now, destroy don't mean literally hit them on the head and kill them. Those individuals who are constantly living in the mind wandering and policing one house with the next house, one house with the next house, constantly mind wandering, they are gradually going to find themselves running out of desires and ideas to latch onto. They're going to be totally empty after a while. They're going to reach what is known now, total frustration. The Lord will abhor the bloody and deceitful man. We know we can't survive by hurting others continuously. And we know we can't constantly trick our neighbor or abuse him constantly, because we will be doing it to ourselves in actuality. In the end, we're doing it to ourselves. So the real lesson we are learning is, when we look at ourselves, we find out that to be happy must come from inside. Thank you.
Listen to me. my heart a song. I will never forget thee, I will never forsake thee. I will never forget thee, I will never forsake thee.
Themselves, all the doors to open themselves. understanding.